Hey, this is John Chris from Saturday Down South. We are at SEC Media Days in Hoover, Alabama. Had a chance to talk to Anthony Booger McFarland of the SEC Network. Wide range of topics. We talked about the defensive line and the state of that position in the SEC coming into 2017. The mild dust that we had with Myles Garrett before the NFL draft this past spring. And of course, what he thinks of the Bayou Bengals coming into this year. Feel free to give it a listen. All right, Booger, let's start with the defensive line. There was a lot of big names that are no longer in the conference. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the first round of the NFL draft alone, you lost Myles Garrett, Jonathan Allen, and Derek Barnett, and Charles Harris. And on top of that, you've got Darius English is gone, and Jeremiah Ledbetter, and Deshaun Hall, and Montrevious Adams, and A.J. Jefferson.
These just keep going.
Really, really good players in the conference a year ago. This is your position. Is there enough talent to keep stockpiling and continue to be the position it always is in this conference?
Well, no doubt. And I always, you know, people always keep asking me about what's going on in this conference from a defensive line standpoint and even a defense standpoint. And they say, man, all the household names are gone. And here's what I equate it to. Remember the first time you saw Friday the 13th or Halloween? Remember Jason and Freddy Krueger? You walked in there and you had no idea how scary those movies were going to be until the first time you saw them. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, man, I don't want to see that anymore. Very similar to these young guys on defense in the SEC. Like, we don't know who they are right now. Yeah, we know Arden Key. We know about Trent Thompson. We know about Rashawn Evans up at Alabama. But you don't really know some of the young guys that are going to come up. The SEC has big, fast guys. That's what this conference is built on. Arden Key's the headliner this year. He's the guy that's going to carry the torch from a defensive line standpoint. He'll probably be the highest drafted guy on defense out of this conference. There are guys in there, not the household names that we know, but there are some young guys that I think that are going to be there in the end.
Now, obviously, Arden Key is going to be the headline guy. You talked about him. He's the best pass rusher outside. And then you have Trenton Thompson in the middle. He's the best guy inside in the trenches. But they were both gone for spring practice.
Yeah.
And we have to be a little nervous about what are they going to be when they come back. Now, they had their different reasons. Thompson was some sort of medical issue. Yeah. And Key, I don't know if we've gotten a great answer yet.
Right. Yeah, I don't think we've gotten that.
No, we haven't. I don't know if we will.
Yeah.
But by the time we get to fall camp, for these guys missing that much time and being away from school, can't we be 100% confident that they'll be who we think they can be?
Absolutely, because they're football players. And the one thing about football, when the ball is snapped, as long as they're healthy and as long as their mindset's right, I think they'll be fine. Arden Key came back, dealing with some personal issues, had a little shoulder surgery. I think he'll be fine from that. They got it way early enough. He understands this is a money year for him, and there's no better motivator than money in a man's pocket. He'll be ready to go. Trent Thompson, he hadn't reached the potential yet. So regardless of what happened with him, he's underachieved so far in this league. Another guy, Daylon Mack, up at Texas A&M. He's a guy who came in with five-star potential, and right now he's shown to be a two- or three-star talent. So there's some guys that are motivated for different reasons, but I do think when the ball is snapped in early September, the motivation will be there.
Now for Arden Key, again, we haven't gotten a great answer as to why he was away. The cynics might say, you know what, he's got the wrong people in his ear.
Mm-hmm.
He's a top 10 pick already. This is Jadeveon Clowney all over again. Is that something that LSU fans need to worry about, that they're not going to get the guy they think they should be getting come the fall?
Well, you always worry about that with young people and, you know, some of the things, some of the influences that they have in their life. But being around that kid, I think he's a football player. Football players want to play football. And there are no guarantees. Okay, there are no guarantees. He's not the generational type talent guy that we've been talking about for the last 5 years the way Jadeveon Clowney was. Clowney was a number one player overall in high school. So he came into college with all the hype and all the ballyhoo. Key hasn't been there. The reason Key has gotten to where he is because he's worked, he's developed, he's gotten bigger, he's gotten stronger. So the work he's put in has allowed him to become that player. As long as he doesn't forget that, he'll be fine. Yeah, you're always going to have people out there, the people that don't know football. Yeah, you know what? You got millions locked up. Just go home and relax and wait till the draft. That's not what football players do. Mm-hmm. Football players don't count their money until you get it. He doesn't have any yet. So he's got to go prove and earn it, and I think he will.
Now, most people know your resume. You were an All-American at LSU. You were a first-round pick.
Mm-hmm.
You wear a couple of Super Bowl rings on your hands. How difficult is it to keep that stuff at bay? Because I know when you were in school, there were a couple of unsavory folks that probably came your direction. I mean, you're never going to be able to filter that out of the game entirely, but I'm curious about your experience, what it was, you know, 20-some years ago.
Yeah. You're always going to have people around, and the influences are there even more now, and they come from a lot of different angles. You know, when I was coming up, I never heard of Twitter. Social media wasn't there. You know, agents came around with their runners. Now agents can send you a DM through Twitter. social media, Snapchat, Instagram. Like, there's so many different ways that they can get to you, even through the internet, all the cyber media that's out there. So I think when it's all said and done, for me, I went back to my values, who I was. My mother taught me one simple thing growing up. You know the difference between right and wrong. And in life, if you use those values and use those characteristics that you were taught when you were younger, they'll carry you a long way. And so it was really simple for me. You know, when a guy showed up to my house with, you know, two strippers and 50 grand in cash, there was a temptation to take it, but there was also a little voice in the back of your head. Hey, you know what's right from wrong. And at some point, when you do wrong, you risk embarrassing the one thing that we all care about, which is our name. And I think for me, I didn't want to embarrass my name, more importantly, my mother's name. And so, although it was hard at times with the temptation and some of the things that were out there, because a lot of people were doing those things, but I had to make that choice, and which was really simple, and was do the right thing, because you know right from wrong.
And let's move on to Trent Thompson, another guy we talked about. I love watching him play. Mm-hmm. I describe him as a playmaker that traditionally was not a playmaking position. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of D tackles who can get you double-digit stops mm-hmm. in a game, but he's one of them. Just what about it from a pure talent perspective separates him from just, you know, your run-of-the-mill between the tackles type of guy?
Activity. You know, the greatest thing for a defensive lineman is to have sweet feet. You know, have feet that move, have feet that are not in concrete. He's got very good feet. He's got good lateral agility. His arms are long. He uses his hands. He understands leverage. Those are all key benefactors for a player who wants to defeat offensive linemen. Let's not forget, offensive linemen are lazy. Most of them are slow. Most of them are fat. All right, so they don't really want to work. So as a defensive lineman, you can outwork them and have productivity. Trent Thompson does that. And I think he understands that the more active I am, the more technique I play with, the more fundamentals that I exude, I think he can be a very good defensive lineman. He's underachieved so far. As much production as he's had,
right,
he's underachieved so far. With the physical tools he's been blessed with, I think he can be better. But you're right, the base, the foundation is there. He's a good player. He's got to build on what he's done so far.
It's amazing to hear you say that he's left some on the table.
Yes.
This is a guy who, he tied for his team lead in sacks last year. Mm-hmm. He led the team in TFLs. Again, that's usually a pass rusher's job. That's an outside backer's job. He's doing it as a three technique for the most part, or even other spots mm-hmm. up front. So just how much better can this guy be if he gets to his potential?
Well, you can have production a number of ways. You can have production schematically, where the coach puts you in position through schemes, through stunts, through blitzes to make plays. And then you can do it the old-fashioned way. You can line up on a guy, you can look him in the eye, you can beat the hell out of him. He's got to get better at doing the latter. Kirby Smart's going to put him in position to make plays through the scheme. They're going to slant, they're going to stunt, they're going to blitz. But on third down, much like the way Jonathan Allen did, much like the way some of the Caleb Brantley did at Florida, some of the great defensive linemen in this conference we've seen, what separates them is when the coach knows he needs to make a play, the coach simply says, you line up on that guy, and you beat the hell out of him. Mm-hmm. That's what football is at its core. Mm-hmm. Football is a game where one man lines up on another, and the best man wins. Now, the coach can help you through scheme. The coach can help you by slanting you and getting you the ball in certain areas. But ultimately, what football is you got to beat the guy in front of you. And he can get better doing that on a down-in and down-out basis.
Now, you've played this position. Now, how often when there's a call in the huddle, is it literally your job to, you know what, shoot that gap, occupy the center, occupy the guard, let Davin Bellamy make the play for you? I mean, it sort of is the responsibility versus making the play yourself.
Well, sometimes, you know, it's an 11-man defense, and you got to set other guys up. It's a team game. And there are times when if you just do your job, it'll allow somebody else to make a play. So that's going to happen. That's part of football. Mm-hmm. But guess what? When you make your play, somebody else is doing their job. So if you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. That's the way defense is. It's you never know who's going to make the play. Mm-hmm. We always talk about this. Do your job. It's really simple. Do your job. If you do your job, the plays will come to you. And so you're going to have to do things as a defensive lineman. We call it the dirty work. If you do the dirty work on first and second down, guess what happens on third down? You get to rush the passer. Mm-hmm. It's third and three. You don't rush many passes. It's third and eight plus. They're going to throw the football. And so as a defensive lineman, you understand in order to do what I want to do, sometimes I have to do things I don't necessarily want to, which is take on that double team, play the run, things of that nature. So it's part of football, man. Sometimes when you come in here, you don't want to read a sponsorship, but you know if you don't, you're not going to get paid. That's just part of it, man.
Dalen Mack is another guy you brought up.
Yeah.
I loved him as a freshman. It wasn't quite there last year, but he's going to have his work cut out for him this year because guess what? Myles Garrett isn't on this side anymore. Deshaun Hall is not on this side anymore. I know Jarrett Johnson has played. I know Quaylen Cunningham has played, but they're not in the league right now. Is Dale Matt the kind of guy who's might be a little bit lonely and he needs to step it up and do it himself?
He's going to have to play. He came in as a five-star tackle out of Texas. He was too fat. Kevin Sumlin's biggest mission was to get him to lose some weight. He's lost some weight. I don't know if he's lost enough. I haven't seen him. I can't wait to talk to Coach Sumlin about him. He's got the opportunity. He's got that quick twitch stuff. Mm-hmm. He's got that stuff that you can't teach in the weight room. Just innate, natural ability. When the ball moves, he's a big man, plays low to the ground. He's got the athletic ability you're looking for. The problem is the conditioning going to be there? Can the consistency be there down in and down out? Not just to make a play in the first quarter. Can you make a play in the fourth quarter when it's crunch time? When it's money time, can you make the plays? If his conditioning level is where it needs to be, he'll be a guy that can contend for all SEC marks. And if you can do that, then you can play against anybody in the country.
How much harder is it to play this position now than it was, again, even a generation ago? For the most part, when you were out there, offense is running 60, 70 plays a game. Yeah. Now it's not uncommon for 80 or 90. Some teams average 85 plays a game. I know you have rotations and fresh bodies, but just having the condition available to run a four-quarter game has got to be different than it was 20 years ago.
It is. It's different, but what it forces you to do is get in shape. You know, when I played, guys were 310, you know, 305. Now, if you're a 280-pound defensive lineman, 285, that's pretty good. Mm-hmm. Like, I think one of the best defensive linemen in the country is Ed Oliver up at Houston.
Oh, yeah.
He's 280, 285. Okay, he's a rolling ball of butcher knives. He'll chop you up and he'll spit you out. He plays sideline to sideline as a defensive tackle. That's kind of how you got to play. Mm-hmm. No longer are you looking at the Mount Cody's from Alabama. Mm-hmm. No, those guys aren't there.
Yeah. Okay, you Coach Saban's not recruiting those guys anymore.
No, they're not. You need guys that are 280, 285. Jonathan Allen may be the biggest, 290. Mm-hmm. Guys got to be able to run. And even then, when you get a guy that's 280, 285, you're still going to have six or seven of them because that guy can't play 80 or 90 plays. The most plays I've ever played in my life, I did in the NFL. I played 92 snaps one day. Mm-hmm. And that was a long day. Now, you don't want a defensive lineman playing that. You want a defensive lineman playing probably 50 to 60 snaps a game. That guy has to be in shape. You'd like it 45 to 50, but 60 snaps is probably the number for your defensive tackles. The ends can play a little more, but what happens is if they play more, then the wear and tear throughout the season in game 8, 9, 10, 11 is going to be there. You want those guys playing 50 or 60 to be fresher down the stretch.
I want to talk about Myles Garrett a little bit. Mm-hmm. He was in the news with you, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. I found this very interesting leading up to the draft where everyone in the Galaxy said he's bar none the number one pick in the draft, and he was, but you were critical of his game. You didn't think he defended the run particularly well. Mm-hmm. You didn't think he was a down-to-down guy from an effort perspective. Do you maintain that criticism, and is that the type of thing where you can't hide that in the NFL?
Well, number one, you can't hide in the NFL. Two, yes, I still maintain it until I see differently. You know, you watch the tape don't lie. You know, football is a game, man, where we can talk a lot, but when you turn the tape on, just be quiet and watch. And when you watch him, he's a guy with freakish athletic ability. You know, he goes to the combine and you say, man, this guy is unbelievable. Freakish, Superman. Turn the tape on, you don't always see it. And so I always get worried when the tape doesn't match what the shorts show at the combine. His tape didn't match that. I get the ankle injury. I get that this past year. But I saw enough tapes from a down in and down out distance where Myles Garrett turned it down against the run. And when you go in the AFC North, where Pittsburgh will literally line up and smash you, Baltimore will line up and smash you, Cincinnati will line up and smash you, you can't turn the run down. Yeah, I get it. He's going to be paid to rush the passer. But remember what I said earlier. If you don't get the third down, because you didn't play first and second down, third down won't matter. So he's got to become an all-around football player. To say he was the best player in the draft, I don't know. Was he the most talented? Yes. And I think that for him and for people in Cleveland, you have to hope that the talent, the effort, and the productivity all match. If they do, you got a Hall of Fame player. Mm-hmm. If they don't, you have Courtney Brown all over again.
So you're guest hosting Mike and Mike, and Myles Garrett is supposed to be in Bristol doing the car wash. He finds out that you're hosting that show, and he won't go on the show.
Yeah, he was in Bristol.
Right.
He was in the hallway, and he wouldn't come on. And whether you agree with my criticism of him or not, I don't think there's a reason for him to use that as an opportunity to turn down the interview on a national television radio show. If anything, my job as an analyst or host in that role is to ask the questions to make the guys look good, Ask the questions that people want to know the answer to. Mm-hmm. Now, how you answer them is up to you and how you make yourself look. But I'm not trying to make the kid look bad. I know what it's like to be a senior or a junior and have aspirations of being a highly drafted kid. I've been there. And so that was not my job or not my thought process at the moment, but he didn't come on. Do I hold it against him? No. Is it if that's the worst thing that happens to him in his career, will he be fine? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have to talk to me. But in Cleveland, as a number one overall pick, he's going to have to deal with the media.
Yeah.
And I promise you, I'm a lot more softer than Mary Kay Cabot and some of the people that he's got to deal
She's
with.
A so, bulldog.
Yeah, no doubt. And so it was a lesson for him. And if I could be someone to help him learn that quick lesson, I'm fine with it.
Now, is this just a millennial thing? You know, I'm 42 years old. I think you're about 40.
I'm 39. Don't put me in the 40 club yet. I'm 39.
I know it's coming.
Please don't.
I know it's coming.
Yeah.
I apologize.
It's coming at some. So it's Christmas, but it's not here yet.
I know you'll be on the golf course one way or another.
Yeah, but, at some point.
Is this just a millennial thing where he can't be criticized and that guy said bad things about me, I don't want to talk about him, as opposed to, I mean, it's not like you were going to get him on the show and butcher him all over again on live TV. You were just going to do a fair job as an analyst. And the fact that he said no, I was critical of him myself. I thought that made him look a little bit weak. And like you said, when you get to the league, you can't hide behind the college rules and be hit with softballs all the time.
You can't. And, you know, for him, it's a new age, man. And I get it. Everybody wants to feel good, look good, sound good. I get it. But when you get $31, $32 million guaranteed, you're the number one overall pick, you can't have the good and not take the bad. And it's a lesson. Mm-hmm. And it's a lesson for not only him, but for young people to come after. Because we, the media, have a job to be critical and analyze. And sometimes that criticism is going to be from a positive standpoint, and sometimes it's going to be from a negative standpoint, but it's still criticism and analytical data that we're going to process and give to the fans in a fun, entertaining manner to make them say, okay, here's what I think about this guy. Because if I don't do it, somebody else is going to do it. And so I think this, you know, Brayden, these new kids, man, they always, I mean, it's like I want everybody to like me, and everybody doesn't like me.
Mm-hmm. So I want to move on to a topic a little more to your heart, and let's talk LSU. Mm-hmm. You're a guy who was critical of Coach Miles his last season or two. I'm curious how you feel what the program is going to be like with Coach Orgeron on a full-time basis. You're from a tiny town in Louisiana. Mm-hmm. He's from a tiny town in Louisiana. Needless to say, you can relate to a guy like this. Mm-hmm. Did you ever even envision someone from where he is and the background he had having this job?
You know, it doesn't matter where you're from. I've proved that. You can come from a small town and do anything. I think what mattered to me most about Coach Orgeron getting this job, he wanted the job and not the money.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people wanted the money.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Herman wanted $6 million a year. Jimbo Fisher wanted a 10-year deal.
Easy, I'm a Florida State guy.
He wanted it. Could have had the job the year before when I told him they should have fired Les, but they didn't listen.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they fired him after game two of the next season further validated my point from the year before. I digress. He wants the job. He's passionate. He understands the task at hand. But with that being said, it's a monumental task, because here's the reason. Because the team you got to beat is Alabama. Nobody's beaten them consistently in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, LSU did play them better than anybody in the conference. The game was a toss-up in the fourth quarter, but they still didn't win. They've lost six in a row going back to, what was it, January 2011, 2012?
Correct.
Okay.
The rematch game.
Yeah, the rematch, which, by the way, probably should have been Oklahoma State, but I digress again. Coach Orgeron has the same task, though, that Les Miles had. Put enough points on the board offensively, recruit Louisiana, and figure out the quarterback position. LSU lost four five-star guys out of Louisiana to Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
You don't lose to Alabama in November, you lose to them in February.
Mm-hmm.
Right now they're losing in February, therefore they're losing in November.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to fix the quarterback position. He got Miles Brennan, a pretty good passer to come. That's a step in the right direction. LSU's always had talent. He's got to fix the talent gap, and once he does that, then I think the changes he's made on the field will take effect. He's got one of the best coaching staffs in the country. All right, Dave Aranda, he's been a top coordinator everywhere he's been.
Mm-hmm.
He's always had a top five defense at Wisconsin. He did it last year at LSU. Matt Canada has put points on the board wherever he's been. The key to his success now is, can he do it in the toughest conference in the country? We'll find out. And so my biggest question to Coach O after saying all that is really simple. What's going to be different? You wanted the job, you got it, you've hired your people. Now what's going to be different this year? I don't think anybody knows that answer. I don't. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's going to be different. Danny Etling is still just a guy. Darius Geis may be better than Fournette. The offensive line will be big and physical. Defensively, they'll be fundamentally sound. But what's going to be different overall about this program now? I think that's what everyone wants to see.
I know that Coach O has had a fantastic offseason. All the road trips, all the booster clubs, mm-hmm. all the jokes about how finally the Tigers have a coach who doesn't have an accent. Mm-hmm. He's had a fantastic offseason. But if they go 2-2 in September, how much leniency is he going to be given? Because he is one of them. Is that going to matter if this team is struggling all over again, can't throw the ball, can't score points, and can't beat the big teams in the SEC?
It'll matter if he's 2-2, but he's in year one, basically. Mm-hmm. So he's got a little rope. Not much, but he's got a little rope. I think they should be undefeated going to Gainesville. I mean, realistically, this team should be undefeated going to Gainesville. Mm-hmm. And that's when things get interesting. Things will get really interesting. Auburn will be tough. Auburn's in Baton Rouge. Going to Gainesville, to me, if they're undefeated, they're right where they're supposed to be. And now at that point, you'll find out who this team really is. Because that game has taken on a whole new meaning now. Yeah, Florida may not be as talented, but Florida scheduled LSU for homecoming. Now, where I'm from.
That was interesting.
And I don't know where you guys are from. You schedule Scrubs for homecoming. Mm-hmm. You couple that with everything that happened last year with the rescheduling of the game. You add in McElwain's comments after the game. That might be the biggest rivalry outside the Iron Bowl in the SEC right now. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be good. It's going to be good theater down mm-hmm. in the swamp.
Now, this is you're putting an awful lot of stock in Matt Canada, and rightfully so. A year ago, Dave Aranda shows up from Wisconsin. He inherits all that 4- and 5-star talent, and there was clearly a difference right away. He did a fantastic job. Mm-hmm. Now, Matt Canada's coming from Pittsburgh, NC State before that. He's not walking into the same situation. Like you said, he's walking into a mediocre quarterback and a scheme that needed all kinds of change, wholesale and otherwise. Mm-hmm. So how much more difficult is his job going to be versus Aranda a year ago?
Extremely difficult, not because he's walking in with all the talent, but because his scheme is better, but the defenses he's going to go against are better also.
Yeah.
You know, when you're in the ACC, Florida State's defense is pretty good, legit. Clemson is pretty good. Louisville.
Boston College
got some good players. After that, not really playing much defense. It's Big 12 on the East Coast, basically. SEC, I mean, even if they're a bad team, Vandy's got a good defense.
Oh, yeah.
Schematically, they're sound.
I love watching Coach Mason on
defense. No doubt about it. So one of the worst teams in the league defensively is one of the best. So that's what he's going against. He's got to figure out a way to, yes, he's got better talent. Yes, he's going to have better weapons. But he's also going against better defenses. So I think the challenge for Matt Canada is, can your offense work in this league? It's kind of like what we always thought about the Wildcat in the NFL. Can the Wildcat work in the NFL? Work for a minute, then it didn't work. Mm-hmm. If you're Matt Canada, can your offense work in the toughest conference in the country? I think it'll work early on because it'll take some time to get used to. Can it work long term? Can't wait to find out.
Now, I want to talk about you personally a little mm-hmm. bit and your media career. You seem to have made such an easy transition. If I recall correctly, you're doing afternoon drive in Tampa. Mm-hmm. The station dumps sports altogether mm-hmm. and you're out of a show, but you're one of the flagship guys at SEC Network. And look where the SEC Network is now. You've been mm-hmm. here since day one. You've been at this event several times now. Could you have envisioned where your career has gone in a relatively short period of time?
You know, it's one of the things, man, that when I first got the job, the powers that be set me down and they said, you know, we hired you because you're you, so be yourself, have fun, be honest. Mm-hmm. And a light went off in my head because my nature is a fun, loving guy. I think I got a decent personality. And honesty is easy because that's how I was raised. And so I never would have thought, though, that it would have translated to what it is now. You know, people laugh sometimes because I'm a country boy and they laugh at the accent and they laugh that I grew up, you know, eating hog crackling and walking outside barefooted and, you know, playing in the dirt. But when I look at football, I try to simplify it. Mm-hmm. You know, I try to make the person at home feel like that they're astute at football. You make the complex simple. I'm not trying to give you a bunch of names you've never heard of. It's really simple. The receiver is supposed to run out 10 steps, turn around, quarterback's supposed to throw the ball. If the ball is not there, it's the quarterback's fault. If the ball is there and the receiver drops it, it's his fault. It's as simple as that. Mm. We don't need to tell you it's a 10-yard button hook and he's throwing a timing right on a three-step drop. Nobody cares about that. Mm. And so I've tried to make this game simple for people to watch and pay attention to and just have fun with, man. I've been blessed. I've been given an opportunity. You know, anytime you take advantage of an opportunity, you first have to have been given the opportunity. And I was given the opportunity. It's been fun. It's been enjoyable. It's not work. I get a chance to talk about football on a day-to-day basis, man. And that, for me, is a breath of fresh air.
Now, I think a lot of fans out there just assume that if you're an ex-athlete, you get a job, you go on TV, and you talk. But I've worked with enough athletes in my career to know that you guys put in the work, too. I mean, you guys are doing your homework, and you're on the road trips, and you're on the phone, and you're watching film, and you're talking to coaches. This is a job. You're not just showing up, and the lights go on, and that's it for you.
It's fun, man, but it's got to be work. And, you know, some athletes tackle this as a hobby. Some athletes tackle this as a profession. Mm-hmm. The ones that tackle it as a hobby don't last long. The ones that attack it as a profession, the way they did when they played, those are the ones that last a while. I still take notes. Like, I'll sit there. It took me 2.5 weeks to prepare for these 4 days. Just taking notes, going through team by team, doing run-throughs, going back over, reading information. Because you don't find all your information in one spot. You got to find little nuggets here and little nuggets there, and you kind of put your package together about every team, not only in the SEC, but around the country. And you work at it, but it's fun. I was taught a long time ago, when you find a job you love, you'll never work a day in your life. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this is the end for me, but I love what I do. So it's not work. I get a chance to talk to people like you, and my suits aren't as nice as yours, but you know, I get a chance to put on nice suits and ties, and people put makeup on me and tell me to smile, and they bring me food and bring me drinks. So, I mean, I got it pretty good, man.
I think you got it pretty good. So, very quickly before we get out of here, we're here for media days. Who do you like in the East? Who do you like in the West? And who's winning the SEC and going to Atlanta?
Well, I think, you know, if anybody chooses anybody different besides Alabama, they're just being a contrarian. Mm-hmm. So, I'll try to give you something a little different. I'm going to pick Alabama overall to win the SEC. I think number two, and it's the bigger question in both divisions. I think two in the West is a toss-up between Auburn and LSU. I'd lean toward Auburn. I like Stidham from what I've saw on tape at Baylor. If he's still that guy, he's the top 2-3 quarterback in this conference mm-hmm. already. In the East, Florida's won it 2 years in a row, man. But there's a reason they got Malik Zaire there. Like, if you're Malik Zaire, you don't come to Florida to sit there and hang out for a year. You just don't. And if you're trying to get a guy in the summertime to play quarterback, what does that say about the quarterbacks you got? I don't know if they have a quarterback. They only got 3 starters coming back on defense. Not really sure I can count on that. Georgia's the most talented team, but, I mean, the offensive line is terrible. I can get 5 guys from Hillsborough High probably play better line than they did last year. So I'll go with Georgia. I think 2 in the East is one that's up for grabs. South Carolina and Bentley. And what they have coming back at the wide receiver position. I like Kentucky, man. Kentucky is the dark horse. If you're trying to go outside the box, Kentucky in the East, I don't think Tennessee's going to be very good. So long story short, I'd pick Alabama to win it all. I'd pick, if you're asking for my number 2 teams in each division, I think it's going to be Auburn and probably Georgia wins the East. 2 will probably be, I'll go with Kentucky, 2 in the East.
Berger, thanks for your time. It was a lot of fun.
Anytime, bro.
Sure thing.
Yep.
Thank you for listening to the Saturday Down South podcast. If you liked what you heard, make sure you go to iTunes and subscribe. You can also give us a rating. And for all SEC all the time, visit SaturdayDownSouth.com.